broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
I was best friends with one of them, and the other one I had just gone to high school with.
Ooh, okay. She is the mother I never
Our
had.
Detectives requested the release of the weapon used in the commission of suicide.
Take your sticking paws off me, you damn dirty ape.
He's huge.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Where truth is our bitch, and we go through the looking glass to go places other talk shows wish they could, want to, pray to, hope to someday when they get older and they get bigger and they get more grown up. Brother, we're the only ones that can get there for now, and we will take you there with us here every night on the Phil Hendry Show. And we are online as well at philhendryshow.com, and that is a good thing to know because while you listen, you can watch live streaming video right now of me. It's not the most pleasant view, but when we start performing the show, I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised. It's well worth it. philhendryshow.com. Merchandise store opening up this week. It's going to be a beautiful thing. If preliminary reports are accurate, the Ronnie Chasen murder may be solved soon. After they said the ballistics did not match, now they're saying that they do. There's going to be some explaining to do, I think. Not that they got to explain to Phil Hendry or even to you, but just to make things come out like sensible, Beverly Hills PD would do well to explain some things. Sarah Palin shot and skinned a caribou on a reality show, so she did actually shoot it. I mean, I watched the promo, but I didn't watch the show. I saw her drawing a bead on the beast. And did she do it just for ratings? Well, of course she did it for ratings. But is it the right thing to do for ratings? Plus, Oprah Winfrey addresses rumors that she's a lesbian. Marilyn Donnelly and Bobby Dooley both join us tonight to discuss not only the Oprah Winfrey story, but also the television show Glee, Bobby Dooley on in just a moment. Our number 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, our affiliate spotlight tonight on KTLK 1150 AM, our great Los Angeles flagship and affiliate, and WZAN 970 AM in Portland, Maine. And, of course, our website, philhendryshow.com. 877-876-PHIL. Today, sadly, was the anniversary of one of the most shocking events in American history, and gosh knows that we've had a lot of them, and that was the assassination of John Lennon in New York City outside the Dakota Apartments. Lennon had been a member of the Beatles, a revolutionary musical group from Great Britain. There had never been any kind of real successful British musical act, at least on an international scale, the way the Beatles eventually became. They became the number one rock and roll band in the world. They became not only a musical influence, but a cultural influence. They wore their hair differently. They dressed differently. And they influenced an entire generation of young people, not only musically, but culturally and politically, too, as Lennon himself and to some extent the other members of the Beatles got involved in politics and the philosophy of life, if you will. John Lennon was 40 years of age when he was shot by this man, Mark David Chapman, who was psychotic. And John Lennon is long remembered, obviously, as a slain poet, troubadour, and the voice of a generation. On the line with us is Bobby Dooley from Western Estates Homeowners Association this evening. And we're going to remember John Lennon and his music tonight. Bobby, although you have brought with you, and I know that you sent some things via MP3, correct?
Yes, I did, Phil. I sent a couple of songs to your production staff.
That we will use tonight?
Yes.
And one of them is music from the television program Glee, and it is the song by John Lennon, Imagine. And we also have, of course, John Lennon's great song, Imagine, as well. Let me get over and just kind of doing some of these things. Tell me significantly, Bobby, if you don't mind me asking, it's a thing that a man, you know, shouldn't ask a woman, but in this case, I think it's relevant. How old are you?
Oh, no, I don't mind at all. So I'm 39.
You're 39. So you were a 19-year-old, 9 years old. I mean, you were a little girl when this happened.
Yes, I was, Phil. I do remember that my father and my older brother were watching the football game.
Monday Night Football.
Yeah. And that's when Howard Cosell came on and made the announcement that John Lennon had been killed. And it was, I remember my mom and dad both looking very shocked. I didn't know the significance of it. I had heard the Beatles a little bit as a little girl, but I didn't really listen to their music until much later in my life.
And what did you think of the Beatles?
Well, I thought the way most people think of the Beatles, that they're wonderful and their music is it's happy music, and it was you could tell why people of your generation were attracted to it. I think that it was a good foundation for music to come later. But I wanted to, tonight, Phil, do something a little bit different as we remember the music as we start really remembering the music of, and thinking about the music of today, we start with what John Lennon did. But I want to play the song Imagine, as done by the wonderful cast of Glee. And I want to ask my husband, Steve, if you can get the names of the young people.
Okay, I'm getting the people singing it.
We want to get the names of the young people singing the song here. And then we'll tell you what it is.
This is Glee?
I'm sorry?
Is this Glee?
Hold on for this. I wanted to stop. I'm sorry, so what did you say?
I simply asked, is this the cast of Glee?
Yes, it is the cast of Glee. I stopped the music because I don't want to have anyone talking, you know, while it's playing. And
okay, and I got the name here, Amber Riley.
Amber Riley, and she plays Mercedes Jones on the television show Glee.
No countries, it isn't hard to do.
It's lovely.
Nothing to kill or die.
I'm sorry, so what did you say?
Oh, I said that's lovely. She sings very, very nice.
Right. I really wanted your audience to hear it because we've heard John Lennon, and I wanted them to hear Amber, because you are right, she's got a beautiful voice, and if we can just listen to a minute uninterrupted.
I apologize. I didn't know. You want to hear a full minute? I didn't know we were going to do that.
If we could, Phil, I'd really appreciate it, uninterrupted, because I think when we talk over the music.
All right. Here is then Amber Riley and the song Imagine.
I think they should get a lot of credit, and that is also Kevin McHale, who plays Artie.
Beautiful it is. Very, very lovely. The kids did a great job on that.
Now, I know we also have the John Lennon version, and I want to play that to give you an idea on John Lennon's style of the song. And you can hear here, Phil, it's a much more dated.
I can't hear you. Can I?
Yeah.
Let me turn that off. I'm sorry, Ms. Dooley. I couldn't hear what you were saying. Say it again.
What I was saying was it's a much more dated sound. I apologize.
Okay.
You know, it just hard to pick up, and it never does. You know?
Imagine there's no heaven.
I want to ask a question here, Ms. Dooley. I was not allowed to speak over top of the Glee song, and I'm listening to you talking over top of John Lennon. So can we listen to John Lennon for a minute?
We certainly can, Phil, and I apologize. I didn't know that we were... I didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
You're not hurting my feelings. I wanted to hear the Glee, and you said, could we not talk, and we didn't. Now can I hear John Lennon?
Can I say one thing?
Go ahead.
John Lennon, Phil, there's no question John Lennon was wonderful. He was wonderful. But I think you have to remember that what he did on record there, it's very old, and it sounds, and forgive me for saying this, but it's almost as if John Lennon knew he was going to die.
Why do you say that?
God forgive me, Phil, but it sounds as if John Lennon wrote his own funeral dirge with that song.
Don't you think on the anniversary of that poor man's death that we can say something perhaps a bit more positive about the very original? It was the original song.
Yes, it was the original song, and there's no question that John Lennon wrote that. But I think we also have to admit that, how do I say this? This song needed improvement, and I think Glee does that. I am not saying that John Lennon's song is not a good song. I am saying, I think, what most people would say, it's not a great song, but Glee makes it a great song. And when I listen to John Lennon, and let's just listen one more. When you listen to this song, it's as if John Lennon wakes up in the middle of the night and like Lincoln, goes into the room and sees people weeping around his coffin.
Imagine there's no heaven.
That's not what that song's about, you know.
Well, I don't know if you can really say, but listen to this song. It's as if Lincoln and Lennon stood there together. And he's talking to Lincoln. He's saying, well, at least we know we're not going to hell.
Above us, only sky.
You know, Mr. Andre, you know?
No, I don't know.
It's so sad and so... And it really drags, and it just... You know, I said, what do they say, Steve?
Very plodding.
It's very plodding. It's very plodding. So we celebrate John Lennon's life. We do observe this as a sad day. But we celebrate John Lennon's life by knowing that we do have people in the music world that can do better. And listen. Listen to them do better. My God. This is a lovely, lovely song, and it lifts John Lennon's funeral ballad to life.
Imagine there's no country.
This is a young woman that is coming up out of the grave, if you will.
It isn't hard to do.
Well, it sounds a little bit, Ms. Dooley. It sounds...
Excuse me, but you're talking...
I have to talk over the music. I'm sorry, because we have to take a break.
I understand. I'm sorry.
It sounds to me, Ms. Dooley, as if you are on right on the edge of insulting John Lennon's music at the that you're propping Glee.
No, that is not true.
Well, it sounds that way, ma'am.
No one in this world has higher regard for John Lennon than I. I'm simply saying that as John Lennon wrote a very funereal song, the young people of Glee have elevated it to almost just life-giving.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL here on the Phil Hendry Show. We're talking about John Lennon's, the passing of John Lennon. This is the anniversary, if you will, of this sad day in 1980 when John Lennon was murdered on the streets of New York. And we're playing here a song from Glee, Imagine, written by John Lennon, recorded by John Lennon. And I guess the question here is, do you think that Glee improves and elevates a John Lennon song that really was not that good? 877-876-PHIL is our number here. 877-876-PHIL. It's the world famous Phil Hendry Show. And we'll be right back.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
John Lennon and his music today, December the 8th, 2010, 30 years now. 30 years. I can't believe it has passed since John Lennon was assassinated on the streets of New York, outside of his home in New York City. In our country, John Lennon was murdered, and it's unfortunate because John Lennon was a big fan in New York City, and it was just weeks before that he had donated the money to the New York City Police Department so that every one of the police officers at that time in New York City would have bulletproof vests. So he adopted New York, and we're talking about his music here with Bobby Dooley. What I want to make clear here, Bobby, and our number 877-876-PHIL, do you agree with me that John Lennon was a consummate songwriter and performer and musician?
Also, I don't think there's any doubt. But I am saying that when we look at the music of John Lennon, and we look at something that has happened in our country, and I'm excited about it, and that is the television show Glee. Glee is every bit the phenomenon that the Beatles were, not the same way.
Well, come on. I mean, the Beatles, I just got done saying they were global.
Well, Glee is global, too, but it's not the same way. But I think it's interesting that John Lennon meet Glee. John Lennon, the legend, meet the evolving legend that is Glee. And again, if you listen to John Lennon, you listen to that. Listen to that. Are you hearing it, Phil?
I hear it, yes.
That's a die.
It's as if John Lennon is standing with Lincoln.
I know, and he sees his own... Yeah, I know what you're saying.
But you understand that I do not disrespect John Lennon. I love John Lennon. Listen to that sweet, wonderful man singing a beat.
No hell below us.
But poor John Lennon, he didn't have the technology, and I think, Steve, you made that point.
Yeah, Mr. Henry, he didn't have all the technology that they got it now.
Well, when you say technology, you mean recording?
Yes, the ability to record. Listen to Glee and listen to the beautiful... Glee has so much going for it. They have better technology. The musicians are better now. They are hitting all the...
Imagine there's no
country. The singing is better. Obviously, you must think the singing is better.
I won't argue with you that John Lennon's voice was... It was very unique. But I think that's, you know, no one's going to say that John Lennon was Pavarotti, but then he was John Lennon, and so he had a way of singing.
Well, do you think this song is better than the original or not?
Yes or no?
No, I don't. I've never thought that remakes are better, although I will say that Glee's done some remakes of songs that I think are better only because I didn't like the original. All right, can we turn that off now? Or?
We can, but, you know, you were talking over it, and we were trying to be respectful.
No, you were not, because I heard you talking over the John Lennon version of Imagine. 877-876-PHIL. I'm not saying you weren't trying to be respectful.
We were very much so, Phil.
But by the same token, you were talking over John Lennon's version, and you were constantly telling me that I should not talk over this particular version. 877-876-PHIL. We're talking, I guess, about John Lennon's version of Imagine. And the version recorded by Glee. Here is Ron in Tucson. You're on the Phil Henry Show. Ron, go ahead, please.
Hey, all I want to say is that there was not a scenario of dirge or anything. That song was a song of hope and what the world could be and what we could have. I think it was a song of hope and positivity. I'm sorry, Glee did wrote a beautiful.
Well,
they did a beautiful song.
You know,
but you know
mm-hmm,
what? It's an homage
mm-hmm
to Lennon.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that... Are you a musician? Do you know anything about music?
Let's put it this way. In 40 years...
You hear this song? It's as if he is looking into his own crypt. You know? Do you hear it?
We hear it, Bobby, yes.
Well, I don't think how... Yes?
Still talking over the song, aren't you? In 40
I'm
years...
I'm trying to... Mm-hmm.
If Glee has the adulation and the popularity mm-hmm in 40 years mm-hmm that the Beatles mm-hmm and Lennon still do, then mm-hmm you can tell me that they're as big as the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
I was there. I'm 61 years old.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just, you know, things are faster now. It doesn't take as long for things to become famous. I'm not saying this isn't a great song. I'm simply saying that Glee...
But I thought Glee is a piece of music, not just a great song.
Glee sort of embarrasses John Lennon, don't you think?
Why would you say that?
I don't mean embarrasses him from the standpoint of his greatness, but on this particular song.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Thank you, sir. We'll, I don't know whether we got another minute to go here in the hour or what.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL on this, the 30th anniversary of the death of John Lennon. We have Bobby Dooley on the line with us. We're talking about John Lennon's music. We've played Imagine by John Lennon. I guess that's his signature song. And you've also brought in Glee. And the point that you're making here, this being the anniversary of Mr. Lennon's death, is what? Is that his music provides a great foundation?
That really was the point I made at the beginning, that John Lennon's music, and really the music of the Beatles, provides a wonderful, wonderful foundation and launching point for the music of today. And so when you take Imagine by John Lennon and you listen to it in the context of its time, it's a good song, but then you listen to Glee and you are... I mean, for me, I'm just speaking for me, I'm sort of thankful that I'm alive today and that I can say, well, that's really more my music, because it is better.
And so in your own way, you are saying John Lennon was fine, but this doesn't compare to Glee.
No, I don't sound silly.
Yeah, it would sound silly. I'm not saying that those young people are not great singers. I mean, they're fantastic. But there is an emotion and an emoting and a meaning to the song that John Lennon sings because he wrote it, because of the times that he wrote it in. We were in the middle of the Vietnam War, and there were 50,000 American soldiers who'd come home in body bags, and it was a very sad time.
Yes, I understand that, Phil, but I have to tell you, I was 9 years old when John Lennon was killed. It really didn't mean anything to me. I mean, the next day, if someone would have said, John Lennon died, I would have said, I don't know. I was a little girl. So his death is bad, but it's bad because I'm supposed to say that, you know?
No, I don't know. You're now an adult woman with children of your own, and you certainly can relate.
We can relate, but in a lot of ways say, well, John Lennon's dead. Yeah, I know, that's really bad. And then we go home and go, I hope I said the right thing, you know?
Yeah, you sort of go home and hope you said the right thing.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, talking here about the generational differences in the view of John Lennon's music and then and now. Here is Julie listening on WTKK Boston. Go ahead, Julie. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
I don't know how she could compare Glee to John Lennon. Because when John Lennon sang that song, he had such emotion in his voice and the way he did that song. And then you get Glee to say, yeah. Glee, they did a good job, but they had no emotion. Mm-hmm. They have no experience of the stuff that John Lennon went through and seen as as growing up.
Well, I don't know what you mean by emotion. I'm listening to a young black boy singing, and he's black. Okay. Is the caller there?
Yes.
The young man was singing, he's black?
So he's black. What about it?
Well, I think that he can. If you listen to...
All right, now, what are we doing here?
Would you please...
But that's the thing, though. Just because they can sing the song good doesn't mean that they have the emotion behind it. They have no emotion in their voice of how well the song is.
Oh, my God. Would the two of you please shut up?
Don't tell me to shut up, or my caller.
Don't tell me to shut up, woman.
I'm asking you to shut your mouth while we're listening to the song.
Hold on for a minute.
It's a great thing. I've already heard it once, and it wasn't that great.
It doesn't compare
anything to what John Lennon did.
They're not called the Glee. It's called the Glee cast.
All right, fine. We understand that.
I mean,
you know,
and
Ms. Dooley...
What? Have I ever heard
have
what?
Have you ever heard the phrase, singers are dime a dozen? Just because you can sing doesn't mean that you can sing a song with a complete emotion and captivate people with one single song, as John Lennon and the Beatles did time and time again.
Well, then let me ask you this,
like,
and I want you to answer me this.
That sing right. songs that they didn't even write.
Can
I bet
you
if Glee actually tried to write the music, it would suck.
Well, I don't know. You know, I'll take that bet. I would love to hear them write their own music. I bet you they'd be great. But listen to this song and tell me, doesn't this sound like he's turning to a Union soldier and saying, why are they
no,
crying?
No, it sounds emotional. It's a very beautiful song, the way he did it. He did that song perfect.
Mr. Hendry, she's talking over your beloved John Lennon.
She's entitled to talk. We're not doing... Ms. Dooley, this is not a disc jockey show where we can't talk over the music. We're talking over the music because we're making points about the music. John Lennon's music was an original expression, and the song was so pivotal and iconic that...
You know, you use a lot of big words, and I don't think myself, and I certainly don't think that Julie understands when you say iconic.
Oh, sweetie, don't speak for me because I can understand probably a lot more than you can. Please do not speak for me.
Excuse me? So you know what these big words that Mr. Henry's using?
What big words?
Who cares about big words? The point is, Glee, yes, they can sing, but they did not sing it with the emotion that John Lennon had. I know tons of people that would hear John Lennon's music, and it would hit them deep in their soul compared to Glee. Yes, they've done a few songs over that were good, but not great.
Ms. Dooley, why are you messing around with that song? Why are you doing that?
So you can get a taste of it as we're talking.
So we can talk over it the way you don't want me to talk over the...
No, she's annoyed because she knows that Glee isn't that great, and she just wants to start an argument with people.
Wait a minute. Now you said something that I really have to respond to. Glee isn't that great. Listen to this.
Oh, come on, man. This is not an episode of Glee.
Don't think Glee isn't that great.
You,
listen to this.
I don't want to hear Glee, and we're not doing Glee. This is John Lennon's day, and we're talking about his music, Ms. Dooley, and if you cannot make a point, and I think that the point that you made originally, which was John Lennon created a foundation, I agree with that, but you can't remove a building block and put in another because, oh, well, in my opinion, it's better. You didn't know the times, and you didn't know the context for this music. You even said yourself, you had no idea who John Lennon was when he was shot. You were a little girl.
Well, Phil, did you know who Abraham Lincoln was when you were born? No. But do you care about it? Yes.
Oh. Well, she got you, Mr. Henry.
Oh, will you come on? She got me. I still would never put myself up against anybody who was alive during those days. I would never sit there and tell someone who was alive at the time of Abraham Lincoln, let me tell you how it was, man, because I was born 100 years later.
Well, I don't know what you just said there, because I was born 100 years later. Almost sounded retarded.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, thank you very much, Julie, for your call. I appreciate it. 877-876-PHIL. And I will have that woman not use that term. I don't like it. Here is Roger in Hickory, North Carolina on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Roger. You're on with Bobby Dooley. I don't like the word retarded. I don't want you using it, please. Go ahead, Roger.
Okay. I'm not the biggest Lennon fan or the Beatles fan. I was alive when they first came out, and I can remember my sisters acting like idiots about them, but still saying that John Lennon was a great writer, and I'm afraid that the children that's on your show that you're so crazy about are actors, and have they, any of them, published any of their own original music?
Well, that's a very good question.
I'm saying if they were allowed to, I think they would take the top of your head clean off. But they're not allowed to because of the contract what they signed. You know,
in other words, this little girl that you got, you know, raving about, you know, sounds pretty much like another Britney Spears wannabe.
It's like, exactly. It's like the Musketeers.
I don't take that away from her, but how could you compare actors to the people that actually did it?
Well, because, first of all, their voice quality is superior. Second of all, their musicianship, the way they, I don't know what the term, but the way the, their voice quavers, it goes, how do you say it, Steve?
Like they quaver.
The voice quavers, they'll go, imagine, oh, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean, sir? Is the man there?
Yeah, Roger, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, yes.
So I'm asking you, do you know what I mean by voice quaver? When they go, imagine, oh, when they do that, I don't know what you call it.
So you,
John Lennon, does,
prefer,
John Lennon doesn't
sorry,
do that.
But
John Lennon doesn't do that.
Somebody singing nasally and breathily, trying, you know,
what?
Having a child trying to be
what?
Do a,
huh?
an adult
what?
Thing. And, uh-huh.
What?
What?
What are you talking about? I said, John Lennon goes, imagine there's no country. It's nice. It's pretty. But Lee goes, imagine. You know, they go, imagine. You know?
That's no, we don't part. Know what you mean, Ms. Dooley. Are you saying that they do more vocal acrobatics?
No, they're not vocal acrobatics, Mr. Hendry. They're not chimpanzees on a swing. They are singing beautifully.
Right, let's play the song so I know. I don't want to be accused of not listening to what you're saying.
Okay, here it is. Now listen to them. I'm going to talk over this. They go, in there, you know.
That's
oh, God.
That's,
yeah. All right, hold on for a second.
Imagine there's no country.
There, did you hear her go, no, like that? All right.
It is
now listen
hard.
To John Lennon. He doesn't do that.
Oh, my God.
Excuse me. I'm trying to make a point here. Right here, go.
Imagine there's no heaven.
See, it's flat. That's what I'm trying to say, Roger. Imagine there's no heaven.
You're
you
right.
See what I mean?
There is a great difference, and the great difference is John's better.
Right. Exactly. He wrote the song. He knows what the song needs. He knows what the song is about. He gives it exactly the feeling because it's coming from him.
Right.
A man, a young man who came from England and fell in love with America, came to this country and became a part of it and is looking at the world at war and wants peace. This is all through his eyes, not through the eyes of admittedly talented, and they've probably gone through a lot in their lives, but young actors.
So, both of you men, I just want to ask.
What you might add to that?
Mm-hmm. Let me ask, I want to ask both you gentlemen. Are either one of you influenced by race?
Race?
Yes. Are you influenced by the fact that many of the actors on Glee are...
Let's just say shadowy.
Are a little in the shadows.
Are you talking about race?
Yes.
No! I'm not influenced by race.
That the Beatles were white.
Oh, but you know what, Bobby? I thank you, Roger, very much for your call tonight. Very well said. Our number is 877-876. Phil, I'm not going to play that. I'm not doing that dance with you, okay?
But I think, Phil, and I appreciate that, but, you know, and I won't press the point. I won't press the point. But let's be honest. Let's be honest. Let's break it down. The Beatles were four white boys. And what came after the Beatles was the deluge.
Yeah, remember when Marcel Proust said, after me, the deluge.
Marcel Proust said, after me, the deluge. Well, that's very literate. What's that got to do with the Beatles?
After the Beatles came the deluge.
Let's just say it was an awful lot of muddy water.
All right.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't...
877-876-PHIL. I don't think that's funny in the least. We'll be back here with Bobby and Steve Dooley as we talk about John Lennon's music, his legacy, and today's Glee phenomenon. On the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Sing it, Steve.
Imagine there's no world, world peace.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, on with Bobby and Steve Dooley as we talk about John Lennon, the anniversary of his passing. And it's turned into not quite the kind of discussion I wanted to have, Ms. Dooley, because I have great love and affection for John Lennon's music and the music of the Beatles, and I guess that's generational. I understand that. I'll give you that. But you've come on here tonight propping Glee.
No, Phil, I have not.
Well, you've almost turned this into a celebration of Glee and a put-down of John Lennon.
No, that is so unfair. I have not done that at all.
What do you call allowing me to talk over John Lennon's music, but I can't talk over Glee's music?
Because Glee's music is not that well-known. Because I want people to hear it. Listen, you would not even let me... Here, I'll talk over this music. This is Glee, and I'm talking over their music. So,
this one's for you, Artie.
Yeah, I want to go on record as saying this is Glee, and I am talking over their music. I'm basically, if this song is an infant, I am stabbing it repeatedly. And
would you stop, please?
No, I want you to I want to show you that I'm being fair. So if this song were an infant in a crib, I'm pouring scalding water on it right now.
Miss Dooley, I'm going to hang up on you in a minute.
Then I would ask you to please not talk during the song.
I have very limited... Turn that down. I have very limited time. I'm sorry, but I have to continue on with the show and to continue on with... our thoughts on John Lennon, not necessarily on Glee. 877-876-PHIL. But it is a sign of the times, I'll give you that we can't talk about John Lennon without talking about Glee, and that's probably as it should be. I think that's fine. Here is Larry in Jackson, Mississippi. Larry, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. I think Glee are great singers. They do a great job, but just like any other singer, it's their interpretation of a song. It's good, but it's not theirs. Now, you keep hearing about Glee's music, but Glee doesn't have any music they have copies of.
Well, I think what I'm saying really is, let's take the song and what they do technically with it. I did point out to the other gentleman that in singing the song Imagine, Glee went, Imagine,
Yeah, they did some vocal things that John Lennon didn't do. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's better.
Well, I don't know. You can hear this.
Could you turn that down?
I asked you, Mr. Hendry, if you'd shut your mouth while I'm playing that music, and you wouldn't do it.
I'm not going to do it, no. Anyway, thank you so much, Larry, and I agree with you. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to Sherwin on the Phil Hendry Show. Sherwin, go ahead. You're on with Bobby and Steve Dooley. Go ahead.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
I'm listening to you trying to compare John Lennon with Glee. Okay, let me say this here. When John Lennon made this song, he was talking about the trials and tribulations that America was going through. Now, you took this group, Glee, and you saying... They technology, now you got to understand, anybody with common sense would understand that the technology today is more high-tech than the technology of 40 years ago. Now, there's nothing wrong with Glee. I understand what you're saying. It sounds a little bit better. Technology is better. You weren't even born back then. How can you compare these two people? You didn't understand what John Lennon was trying to say. You said you were 9 years old when John Lennon got killed. So how can you compare what's happening with that man seeing the vision that he had compared to today? I don't even know what his belief is. I am black. John Lennon
You're
was
talking over their music. You're talking over their music.
Well, that's the whole thing. That's what everybody's saying. Everyone's saying, why don't they write something? And why don't they...
Mr. Hendry, you and your caller are talking over Glee's music. And
I don't care if I'm talking over their music. You were talking over John Lennon's music. And Glee has not written their own music. And Glee has not produced... They haven't done half the things that the Beatles or John Lennon have done.
But you have to admit, their song sounds better. Sherwin was going to admit that. And I think Sherwin's a little angry at himself that he knows Glee is better than John Lennon.
But what is your Sherwin? Point? This man is a legend. He's a legend.
Well, he may
be
a legend.
Cut the ice.
I think that when you listen to this, doesn't it just make you want to, why even get out of bed?
Oh, will you cut it out with that, please?
Isn't that right, Sherwin? Well, Sherwin wants to agree with
Yes, sir.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I want to know something. Who is this person? Can you tell me who this lady is that you got on your show?
Because her name is Bobby. Bobby, you can you can tell the man yourself, Bobby.
Yes, my name is Bobby Dooley. I'm the president of Western States Homeowners Association, and I'm a very big Glee fan. But I also like John Lennon, and I know today is the anniversary of what happened to him.
Let me see if I can do this slowly to you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I want to try to do it very slow. I'm gonna say this very slow.
Mm-hmm.
Would you stop the music
down for 1 minute, please?
Please, yes.
Very slow. I just want to do this slow.
Mm-hmm.
You got to understand. Here was a bunch of kids come from. They were from overseas. They came over here. They seen everything that America was going through at that time. And they was putting it on record. This man was so creative. He put this
Where
on
were they
record.
From?
Now
Where were they
here
from?
Today. Somebody else, Glee, made a record that this man made, and you want to compare the technology. Yes, we grant you, the technology today is very high tech, and a lot of things happened today.
Did they come over on an airplane or on a ship? I don't know how long ago it was. Because if it was on a ship, then I grant you.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
The detectives were able to do numerous interviews, and through the information obtained,
that makes it seem like he had some weird relationship with.
So when those, to me, dumb rumors come up, then you
are gay.
Again,
disrespecting my culture, man. Disrespecting my people, man. We can't stand up for this, man.
How would they want to smack you upside the head?
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And we're online at philhendryshow.com. Head on over to our website. Check us out on our live streaming video, live streaming audio of the show, as well as our thousands of hours of archived material. Just thousands of hours of the groundbreaking Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Joining us this hour will be Jeff Dowder. He's a part-time professor of mechanical physics at Caltech University. We're going to talk, though, about the McRib. That's right, the McRib, which is a sandwich that is being sold by McDonald's. And it is such a successful entree on their menu that it has boosted November sales, not just in the United States, but globally. Even though McDonald's, it was very interesting. I saw that not that I watched the stock market. This happened to be a part of the story I was reading, that McDonald's shares fell $1.46 a share to $78.88. But I digress. I'm sure that might have more to do with something non-food related. Anyway, Jeff Dowder will be joining us, 877-876-PHIL. And as we look at the story, McDonald's Corporation says a key sales figure rose 4.8% in November, helped in the United States by the popularity of the limited-time McRib sandwich. Now, I say limited time for whatever reason, and McDonald's has its reasons. They sell this sandwich sporadically in the United States. The only country where it is available year-round, or maybe not the only country, but one of the countries it's available year-round, for whatever reason, Germany. In Germany, you can get the McRib. It may be because there is a large American population in Germany, much of it military. I mean, I'm just guessing here. McDonald's McRib promotion ran nationally November 2nd through November the 22nd, although some individual restaurant owners may have extended the promotion until the end of the month. The McRib sandwich, which consists of a ground pork patty, pickles, onions, and barbecue sauce on a roll, was first introduced in 1981. It is available year-round, as I mentioned, in Germany, but has only been offered occasionally in the United States, and its scarcity has helped it garner a cult-like popularity. And joining us here, Professor Jeff Dowder. And I'm asking you about this, Professor Dowder, because I know you're involved in physics, but you're also involved in teaching nutrition. Is that correct?
Well, not teaching. I'm involved as a volunteer on a nutrition project that helps low-income families and others, seniors and so forth, who are on a, you know, like a fixed income or on a limited income, make the right food choices, and it's part of little public service or community service that I not only involve myself in, but, you know, also sort of, you know, involve my, you know, get my students and everything to do. And it was, you know, I mean, it's kind of interesting because, first of all, you know, I'm not really down on McDonald's food. I don't think it's that good, but I know there's worse, you know.
When you're not down on McDonald's, you're not saying that, you're not telling people to go eat there.
No, I mean, I'm not telling people to go eat there. You know, I was, you know, I grew up in California, and I was part of hamburger culture, you know, until I started. And that really had more to do with, well, I mean, my girlfriend right now is, and I suppose a lot of people, a lot of men can say that, you know, they sort of clean their act up nutritionally when they, got into a relationship or whatever with a woman who was more health conscious.
Well, that's true. I mean, when I got married, you know, I ate more, that's for sure, but it was good food, you know.
Yeah, you know. So, I mean, what I like to do is look at a food from the standpoint of nutrition, and also is the food, you know, healthy for the. And this is going to kind of sound weird, but is it healthy for the country? You know.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, like the McRib. You know, here's a thing that I think people need to remember about a McRib. And any pork presentation or pork product presentation, whether it's McDonald's or any other, you know, company, is that it's a pork presentation, and it's, you know, and Muslims are now sort of making it, you know, they're kind of making it known, you know, that they're here. And also, you know, Jewish people are more and more, you know, kind of popping their heads up and going, hey, you know, what's up? So the pork, you know, the pork presentation in a bun or the sandwich is not really, you know, the future. You know, and
I don't hear a lot of I don't hear a lot of Jewish people talking about. And frankly, I don't really hear a lot of Muslim people. Although,
oh no, the Muslim people are. I think you know that the Muslim people who have been, you know, involved in a lot of struggles for their rights under the laws of the world are. You know, they're struggling for their rights and everything. And probably the Jewish people don't make that much of an issue out of it because they've been able to, you know, get a lot of their rights. But the Muslim people still are trying to find their rights. And one of the ways that they're going to do it is to take a look at American culture and make sure that, you know, what's going on with it is going to make sure that their rights are going to be, you know, good. I mean that they're gonna have the rights. So
So what has that got to do with the McRib? So that's a pork sandwich.
Oh, so it's a pork sandwich, and that means that the Muslims are going to definitely not. That's going to be a deal breaker for the Muslims. So here's my whole point about it. You can enjoy the McRib for as long as you want to enjoy the McRib, but it's still not a sandwich that's got much future left in America. And the thing that I think is kind of...
Why do you say it doesn't have any future left? Are you saying that the McRib sandwich... What about pork sandwiches?
Well, I mean, pork sandwiches, in what sense?
Well, like, you can go to any barbecue joint, you know.
No, I'm not talking about that. I mean the pork... I mean a popular pork offering like the McRib at McDonald's. Is going to be very vulnerable because it's very public and it's very upfront. So McDonald's McRib pork sandwich is going to be in the crosshairs of Muslims who don't want to be offended by a pork presentation like that. yeah, they know that there's barbecue places, and yeah, they know that there's pork, you know, bacon or what have you, but to put it up in their face is wrong. And McDonald's, you know, I got to say something, Phil. McDonald's does it a lot.
Well, I don't know what you mean by put it up in their face. Because of the fact that McDonald's is so popular?
Well, yeah, because McDonald's will have...
I mean, McDonald's is a worldwide organization now. Let's talk about McDonald's just for a second, okay? 32,000 restaurants, 100 countries. I mean, this is an international effort.
Well, it's an international effort, but the only country where the pig sandwich, the McRib pig sandwich, is an issue is the United States, where it's, you know, they offer a little bit and it goes away. They offer a little bit and it goes away. Because you don't want to run afoul of the Muslim laws, you know, with regard to the pork. And
I'm not familiar, and maybe I should be familiar, I'm not familiar with Muslim law regarding food. I imagine...
Well, it's they don't eat it. The same way that a lot of very fundamentalist Jews don't eat it, because they consider it to be an unclean animal, you know. And so for McDonald's to say, well, hey, guess what, you know, yeah, we got a McRib sandwich, hey, you know, it's like they're dancing back and forth with a pig, with, you know, the pig sandwich. I mean, it looks like they're trying to piss off Muslims, is all I'm saying. And
how are they pissing off Muslims? This is something that has been around since...
I'm not saying that they are actually trying to, but it looks like it.
Well, the sandwich has been around since 1981.
No, I know.
Okay, so it's not like we've had this... We've been involved in this national dialogue now about the Muslim faith because, you know, we want to respect religion. At the same time, we want to have a secular... you know, we have law. So why would they even think that?
Because here's why, Mr. Henry. McDonald's is all over the world. It's in 100 countries. You said it. 32,000 restaurants, and on top of everything else, they you know, they just get this big broadcast, big billboard. Yeah, we sold 3 billion, you know, or I don't know how many that they say, you know, yeah, we've sold, you know, we're McDonald's. Yeah, look at us. We sold 300 billion pig sandwiches. So, you know, what do you think about that, Muslims? You know,
it doesn't say that.
No, I know it doesn't say that, and I know the Muslims don't think it says that, but it's basically saying we're McDonald's and we go out, and you know, and when we have a sandwich, we'll sell it, you know, and there's nothing you can do about it.
All right, Jeff Dowder joining us, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. So the McRib sandwich has no future in America because of the current popular voice of the American Muslim. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. I mean, I don't know about the popular voice of the American Muslim. That's one aspect. There's the international immigration of Muslims to America. There's the international voice of Muslims. I mean, they're going to have something to say about it. And so we sort of have to, you know, get our ducks in a row and sit down and figure out what we're going to say, you know. And
to say to who, man? I mean, are we talking, who are we talking to?
Well, whoever represents the big Muslim guy. I mean, forgive me, I don't know.
What do you mean, like a pope? They don't have a pope.
No, I know they don't have a pope, but whoever the main... like Mecca, I guess he'd live in Mecca, Muslim, is going to want some answers about this, you know, rib sandwich. And I think the way for McDonald's to handle it is to say, we're rolling it out. Yeah. They like it in Germany. Yeah. But you know, it's coming to an end. And we're not going to have it no more. I mean, we're not going to have it anymore. And that at least begins to cool out the Muslims, because let me tell you something. I've been a teacher at the college level, and a lot of my Muslim students, they get pretty ticked off about it. I mean, they get crazy about stuff. And the thing that I don't want to see is a lot of kids on campus that are Muslim kids, and they all start hopping up and down and getting crazy about stuff, because that's what they do. And if McDonald's goes, yeah, you know what, I think we're going to have a McRib, and we're going to sell the pig sandwich, and there ain't nothing you can do about the pork. And now I got, you know, I don't know, 500, 600 Muslims who are hopping mad, and they do. They start hopping around a bonfire, with signs and everything, and it's a pretty bad thing.
Boy, I got to tell you, you don't sound very sympathetic to your students.
I love my students.
All right, well, talking about a bunch of Muslim students hopping around a bonfire with signs because of a McRib sandwich?
I'm saying because of the cult, yeah. Because of the McRib sandwich, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
877-876-PHIL. Jeff Dowder joining us talking about McDonald's McRib sandwich, a pork sandwich that is very popular in the United States and will eventually have to go away because of the rising tide of influence of Muslims in our country. Pork being a prohibited or proscribed food among some Muslims, as well as it is among other religions. But he's basically saying with this big sales boost that McDonald's saw from sales of the McRib sandwich, don't get used to it because the McRib's got to go away with the voice of Muslims about to be heard. 877-876-PHIL. So, you know, here again, American culture, American attitude, American politics being shaped by religion, in this case, the Muslim religion. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry.
And welcome back to our show this evening, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, joined by Jeff Dowder from Caltech. McDonald's says a key sales figure rose 4.8% in November, helped in the U.S. by the popularity of this limited-time McRib sandwich. The McRib sandwich, for whatever strategic reason, is sold intermittently in the United States. However, it is a year-round sale, for instance, in Germany. And the sales of the McRib sandwich were the strongest in France, Germany, Russia, and the U.K. That was the strongest, I should say, in Europe.
Yeah, no, it's still, the McRib is still overall more popular in the United States. But that's what sets up, Mr. Henry, the conflict with the Muslim. And I don't know if you ever saw the movie Lord of the Flies.
I saw the black and white, the original.
Yeah, if you've seen Lord of the Flies, then you get a general sense of what can happen to the Muslim when he knows that the pork, you know, the pork product or the McRib sandwich is being sold. There is a pheromone. I don't know if you know about pheromone or anything.
And the scent?
Yeah, the scent of that. And if you've seen Lord of the Flies, Muslims will get agitated in that sense because they feel they're being disrespected, but also because of the pheromone of the pork. So, like I said, you know, I've got 500 students dancing around a bonfire, you know, tearing their shirts off, their hair gets unkempt.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. It sounds to me like there's a little bit of a stereotype going on here with the reaction of Muslims to the sale of pork. 877-876-PHIL. Brian in Atlanta, go ahead, sir. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Jeff Dowder.
How you doing, sir?
Good, sir. Very good.
First, I'd like to say McDonald's breakfast menu is all pork, basically, except for the chicken sandwich and the chicken biscuit. The McRib is a limited item since, like you said, 1981. It comes about every year and a half or two, and then it goes away. And they bring it back, you know, to boost sales, I guess. But, hey, look, the McRib is back. I don't know what he's talking about. If you look at all religions by a book, like the Torah, which is the Jewish, they don't eat pig. The Old Testament, for the Christians, they say the pig is an unclean animal, and the Muslims. Mm-hmm. Say the same thing. I don't understand his point. And then he says hopping around a bonfire and tearing their shirts off. I mean, this guy sounds like he's like a fake college.
I'm a college professor. I'm a college professor. I'm just talking about what could happen.
Well. You don't speak well to be a college professor. You say
I'm a physics professor, okay, but I also work in the field of nutrition. All I'm saying is that okay, everything you say is right. There's only one problem. Nobody at McDonald's is going, hey, yeah, come on down to have breakfast and eat all the pork products that we have to offer. But when they have a McRib, they're all like, yeah, pork, 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 and everything like this. So that immediately is going to... I'm saying McRib is like a standalone menu item that is going to stand out, and McDonald's is selling it like that and saying, nobody's going, you know, come on down and have our pork breakfast, but they are saying, come on down and get a, you know, get a pork sandwich. And to your point about the Muslim...
So you're saying, basically, because... they brought an item back that's been here since 81.
They're highlighting
They're highlighting a sandwich, which they should do. It's called marketing. That's called marketing.
Fine. They can market it, but they've got Muslims out there that are about to start peeling their shirts off.
And the word for smell is called pheromone. It's not pheromone. It's pheromone. Pheromone, man.
What are you talking about, man? Talking about pheromones. I don't even know if that guy knew what he was talking about. But I mean, the point is, when you have a sign up that says, "Yeah, how you doing? We just sold 300 billion pork sandwiches. How's that make you feel?" You know, you're challenging.
They're not saying that. I don't know where you're getting the idea that this is an overt attempt by McDonald's to piss off Muslims.
Well. I would ask you this then, Mr. Henry. I mean, maybe it's not overt, but they don't know anything about the neighborhoods that they're. You know, McDonald's is in Pakistan. You know about that, don't you? Don't you, Mr. Henry?
Yeah, I know about that. And by the way, that's a very good point. They're in Pakistan. They ain't been burned out yet.
Not yet, but they're land. They're yeah. Okay, so you don't even know what you're talking about because now with the McRib, good luck. I'd hate to be doing lunch pickup at the McDonald's in Islamabad about 2 a.m. when somebody's trying to forget it.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And our website is philhendryshow.com. So after the show, you can go over there and check out our show log, those of you who might have missed some of the show. And tomorrow, the show is available on our website on demand. The video cast, as well as the audio cast. The audio podcast is available at iTunes, as well as a mini podcast, as well as a number of our classic Phil podcasts, which we're going to be adding to this week. Talking to Professor Jeff Dowder this evening about the McRib sandwich from McDonald's, which was introduced in November for a limited time. And I remember us reporting on this, Professor Dowder, because we said, wow, look at this, the McRib. Now, I'm not a big McRib. I'm not even really a big McDonald's fan. This doesn't even sound like a McRib sandwich when they say it's ground pork.
Well, I mean, it doesn't really matter. Right? It's not, a McRib, it's not a rib. You're right. It's a pork patty sandwich. I'm much the same as the patties, what they'll use. In breakfast, you know, when they serve the breakfast specials and everything, but that's not the point. The point is for McDonald's to be offering the McRib at a pivotal time right now in American current events where you have a Muslim population base that is trying to get some things done. You know, they're trying to get a mosque built, and I'm not weighing in on, you know, pro or con, okay? I'm just saying.
All right.
They're trying to do that. Kind of split down the middle on how we ought to deal with terror and everything like this. And then you introduce into that a guy sitting there at a McDonald's eating a pork pig sandwich, and sitting next to him is a lady maybe in a hijab, which is the Muslim head dress, and a guy who is also, decked out or however you want to call it. And now here's this guy sitting there, you know, biting down on this McRib and looking over at him and like, you know, hi, how are you doing, man? I'm licking my pork. How about you? Yeah. all I'm saying is, you know.
Well, what are you saying? I mean, you said last half hour that we're going to have a bonfire with people dancing around it with their hair disheveled, stripping their shirts off.
I mentioned the movie Lord of the Flies because it brought up an image of, you know, pissing off a lot of Muslims. And I don't know whether you want to do that or not. I don't know whether this is the time or the place to be doing that. And I don't think it's the time or the place for McDonald's to be saying, yeah, let's see. We just had 9/11, and we got this mosque, and we got this, and we got that. Oh, I know. Let's bring the McRib back. I don't think so. Call me crazy.
Yeah, I think you're making a big deal out of nothing.
I don't think so, Mr. Henry. And, you know, I'm around students a lot.
All right. Well, I just sounds like you're connecting some dots that don't need to be connected. Here is Mike in Durham, North Carolina, listening on WZTK. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
My feeling is this. If the Muslims are so offended that McDonald's is selling a pork product, they can simply stop going to McDonald's.
Yeah, you're right about that, but where are they going to go then?
There's fast food chains to go that don't sell pork.
Well, no, there's not, because Wendy's sells sausage meats. But, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, yeah, that's a good point, but I would simply say to the caller this. McDonald's is the biggest fast food restaurant in guess where? You got it, Pakistan. So to get Muslims to stop going to McDonald's would be like getting any other American to stop going to McDonald's. Ain't going to happen.
Well, what do you mean ain't going to happen? This guy's making a very good point. There is, you know, buyer beware, you know.
Buyer beware. I mean, are you going to make your customers happy or not?
You're going to make them happy.
Then why would you sell a pork sandwich? It's like me right now. I'm looking at a commercial called Operation Smile, okay? Okay, are you guys there? Is the caller there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I'm looking at a commercial called Operation Smile. It's a bunch of kids that have got cleft, you know, they got like, well, excuse me for saying hair lips, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I want? Do I want to see that? No. Same thing with a Muslim and the McRib.
What are you talking about?
I just got done saying.
Well, it's got nothing to do with anything. I know the commercial you're talking about. Those poor babies. Those children need surgery.
Yeah. But I don't want to look at that while I'm eating.
I don't.
All
think
right, anyway.
Muslims are offended by the sight of pork. I've dealt with many Muslim people and. I work with Muslim people. They eat with other people that eat other things that they don't eat.
Right.
I don't think they're really offended by it.
But, I mean, they cannot. There's something in their religion I know that says they can't be around pork, if I'm not mistaken.
Can't be around it.
Can't be around it as it's being eaten, yeah.
They can't touch it or prepare it.
Right, that's it, yeah. So, you know, you run the risk at McDonald's if you're serving McRib and a guy is going up to get his whatever he's getting and he's Muslim and his hand brushes the pork on your sandwich.
Well, when's that going to happen, man? Sorry, Mike, go ahead.
Well, that might be this gentleman's only good point is that, you know, someone might handle the McRib and then handle another sandwich and they, you know, that technically could be offensive, you know, to the person that they might not want the item. And what
there you
I'm
go, yeah.
To eat, I have seen, you know, Muslims, they won't eat certain things, a hamburger or whatnot, because of how it's prepared. But there's
yeah,
other
right
things
here.
For them to eat that they will eat.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. So he might have just gotten done preparing a pork, and then, or I mean a McPork, and then he prepares like a McBurger, and he just had his hands all over the pork.
Well, first of all, I think a lot of these restaurants now wear these plastic gloves, you know.
I don't think that matters. I think the pork goes... I think they think... The Muslims believe that the pork can go through it. Not like magic, but it doesn't stop it.
All right. Anyway, Mike, thanks for your call. 877-876-PHIL. What does that mean, it doesn't stop it? What is that?
If you're handling pork... And then you handle a McMac, okay? And, all right, so the Muslim will say, hold on for a second, that's my McMac, but weren't you just touching pork? And the guy will say, yeah, I was, but I was wearing these plastic gloves. And which you've seen, you just mentioned, Mr. Henry, like at Subway and everything?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the Muslim is going to say, okay, yeah, I get it, but that doesn't really stop the pork.
Hello, you there?
Yeah.
What does that mean, it doesn't stop the pork?
In other words, what I'm saying is, if pork is a sandwich or a meat that Muslims can't eat, for religious grounds, we're in an area of spirituality and metaphysics, so just to say I wore plastic gloves while I was handling your pork, or not yours, but I mean another guy's pork, and then I touched your meat, okay, that basically doesn't stop the effect of the pork in, you know, on you.
I don't understand this at all.
It's got a lot to do with kosher law and stuff.
Okay, 877-876-PHIL. I don't understand. But then again, I don't understand kosher law either, so I shouldn't comment. Here is Sam in Detroit. Are you kidding with us?
Am I what?
Are you kidding?
Well, I mean, am I kidding about what?
Are you kidding about the freaking pork?
No, I'm not kidding about anything. What I'm telling you is, listen, I interface with Muslim students every day. And with the Muslim community in Pasadena especially. And I'm telling you, McDonald's picked a bad time to be, you know, trotting out a pork sandwich.
Go ahead, Sam.
I live in Detroit, Michigan. We have the largest Muslim population outside of the Middle East over here. And I'm in McDonald's two or three times a week. With Muslims, with the McRib signs everywhere. I don't see any suicide bombers trying to come up in the McDonald's.
I didn't say suicide bomber.
To Ruben in Tuscaloosa. Go ahead, Ruben. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
The number of Muslim students I talk to.
I know. I understand. Go ahead, Ruben.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good.
I'm considering, how about the diabetics that go into McDonald's? You know, I'm pretty sure there's more diabetics than there are Muslims. And, you know, and all those treats that they offer there with high carbohydrates and whatnot, you know, we're not talking about offending them. You know, this country...
What are you talking about, man? Diabetics, that's not a religion, man. That's a physical condition.
No,
they're not going to be offended by sugar.
I understand that. But, you know, that philosophy is Old Testament. You know, the New Testament, we have a new covenant. You know, this country was built on Christian values, and everybody that came over here has to assimilate. You know, otherwise, you know, just go home, go back.
Well, I mean, I understand what the gentleman's saying, but if you're talking about something as basic as the pheromone, where when a Muslim smells pork, it's Lord of the Flies, How do you debate that?
Pardon?
I said, I'm talking about a basic physical reaction to the pheromone of the pork. So if a Muslim smells pork meat and suddenly it's a bonfire, spears, and, you know, burning American flags, how do you combat that?
Well, I mean, burning the American flag is one thing. You know, if they want to go ahead and do that, well, more power to them, because our flag stands better than that anyway.
Your what?
Our flag stands better than burning it. You know, if they burn a flag, we just go get another one.
Hey, you get another flag.
Well, yeah, I know, but I mean, what I'm trying to say is, I understand that, but what I'm saying is, when a Muslim smells pork, you know, it turns into like some kind of a Swahili war dance. And
what are you talking about with Lord of the Flies and Swahili war dance?
Okay, yeah. You've never seen Muslims on TV going "Death to America." They all do that. Have you ever seen that on TV where they'll go? You've seen that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what they do. Okay. All right. So shove a pork sandwich into one of their faces. And you all of a sudden got, that kind of stuff.
What, are you an idiot or something, man? You're telling me you're talking to Muslim students and you're talking like this?
Mr. Henry, this is very, you know, What are you talking about?
What am I talking about? You're talking about a lousy McRib sandwich causing some sort of a spontaneous demonstration with flag burnings. And I'm telling you, it can't possibly be like that. Hey, Reuben, thanks for your call, sir. Appreciate it very much. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. Just exactly how offensive is the McRib sandwich, a pork sandwich? How offensive will it be to the Muslim population of America as McDonald's considers rolling out the McRib 24/7, man. You know, 12 months out of the year. 877-876-PHIL. Back with more on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Well, you're talking about me like I'm crazy.
You sound like a nut.
Phil Hendry.
And welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Coming up next hour, our news hour, and with us will be Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard, as usual. I think, I'm not sure, but I think we might have Margaret Gray on the line with some discussion of Elizabeth Edwards. But I'm not sure if we'll have time for that. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Professor Dowder with us talking about the McRib sandwich, which is a piece of marketing. It's a sandwich. It's a food from McDonald's. But the campaign and the actual product is very popular and is a bit of a cult popularity. And according to you, Professor Dowder, is a big, big mistake because of America's Muslim population, correct?
Well, that's my point. And, there's an old saying, you know, that's my story, and I'm sticking with it, you know. But I'm not saying that pork is bad inherently, but I'm saying there's going to be a very tough road to hoe when you try to get a pork sandwich out there, and you've got Muslims who will say, right, that's okay, but I ordered a McMac or a big pounder. I don't know the names of these sandwiches.
Like a quarter pounder.
Quarter pounder. And they'll say, I ordered a quarter pounder, and you rub pork all over it. You're going to have lawsuits. There's no question.
877-876-PHIL. Let's move on to Tammy now in Houston, Texas, listening on KPRC. Hi, Tammy. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah. The small point that I think that the professor may be trying to make is, for instance, when my Muslim friends come over to my house, they will not eat off of my utensils or my plates or out of my pot because I have prepared pork in those, I've been eating pork out of those things. So maybe that's the small point that he's trying to make about the gloves.
That's kind of a hassle for you, isn't it? Isn't that a hassle for you that you got to, I guess I got to go get another bunch of kitchen appliances because I can't serve no food out of this. You know what I mean?
Well, no, we just go and we get something to eat out. But I totally don't agree with you. I feel like you are being a bit racist and stereotypical with the Swahili war dance and the Lord of the Flies and the beating of the chest and ripping off of the shirts. Over the McRib. The other thing is that the McRib did not just come out after 9/11. 9/11 was in 2001. The McRib has been out since the 80s. It comes every single year right before Christmas. I partake in the McRib fanaticism.
So you're into the McRib, into the McRib, mythology, I guess you would call it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. But it comes out every year at this time.
Right, yeah. Okay, now one thing I do want to say about Lord of the Flies, that was a book about white English schoolboys who reverted to a sort of primal culture because of being, a crash landing on an island. So
I am
really
very
not talking
familiar
about
with Lord of the Flies.
You know that we're really not talking about race so much as we're talking about a mindset that is brought on by something. So in the Muslim, I'm afraid, and I don't know, you can help me with this, Tammy. I mean, if your friends come over and you wave, like, the scent of pork under their noses, are you going to tell me you don't at least think about them suddenly going, and all that?
No,
what?
I don't consider,
these are her friends.
Well, I don't think that my friends are educated. So educated people carry themselves differently than uneducated people. It's just like when you see those Muslims out there being recruited, you know, 99% of them are uneducated. They
uneducated,
are poor, they're hungry, they're desperate, you know, for some
kind of
belonging.
True.
It's the same thing with black people and gang members, you know. They don't go into black culture. They go to the gutter to recruit members of the Bloods and the Crips. Because any higher thinking person is not as susceptible to those types of behaviors.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. I'm afraid that you could waver, just waft the scent of a McRib at a Muslim, and because of the hunger.
No, she just got done saying that her friends are educated.
Oh, I understand. Okay. Yeah, they're not hungry.
No, the ones that are poor are hungry. Tammy's friends are well-educated. Tammy, thank you so much. 877-876-PHIL. Darren in Valdosta, Georgia. Go ahead, sir. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Jeff Dowder.
What? Okay, Phil, what in the world does that have to do with anything? Why are you running worried about what they're worried about pork sandwiches at McDonald's? We have a lot
because
to worry about.
Because the pork sandwich at McDonald's is offensive to the Muslim culture. And
again, so we're supposed to change our whole culture in fear of 1% of our culture?
No, I'm not saying that, but I am saying that they may want to think twice about how they're all, McRib, you know, all 300 billion sold and trying to be all, you know, a big shot about it.
What do you mean a big shot about it? What are you saying that they're trying to rub it into the noses of Muslim people?
I think... Not unknowingly they are, unwittingly they are, And so if you're in a McDonald's, Darren, and you have a McRib, and you're about to sit down and rip into a McRib, and you see a lady with a hijab on, which is the Muslim headwear, aren't you going to think twice before you unwrap it?
No,
because of the
this
scent.
Is America.
Because
it's
of the scent of the pork.
We all want to have.
Not because of the scent of the pork?
No.
What do you mean
I don't
the scent
care what she thinks. Cause she don't like the scent of my sandwich. Move.
Well, that's what I was saying to Mr. Hendry and the other lady, and they didn't believe me about Lord of the Flies. You know? Did you
again,
ever see
you
that movie?
To a systematic movie that has absolutely nothing to do with the topic you're talking about.
Exactly. You're talking about some kids that crash-landed.
I'm saying that if you waft the scent of pork under the nose, that it reverts a person back to a primal tribal state.
Oh, bull crap.
What you're saying is if
you
waft the scent of pork underneath their nose, they'll revert back and start eating pork? And
no, but
they'll
revert back to
throw the whole religion into a chaos?
It will be the bonfire stage of it. It won't be the modern buildings. It'll be back to the time when Islam was, they just had bonfires.
Phil Hendry.
What?
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Texas were able to do numerous interviews, and through the
I'm old school with new ideas.
So when those, to me, dumb rumors come up,
that is a threat on the radio.
She's going to hell, this bitch.
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. That's right. Every night, man, through the looking glass and beyond, going places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. They know it. We know it. You know it. 877-876-PHIL and online at philhendryshow.com. If you're not watching this show as well as listening to it, you're just missing 75% of the show, to be perfectly honest with you. We're online with live streaming video every night, and we have thousands of hours of downloads and archived material as well. Get a backstage pass. Get with it. Walk into the 21st century with your chin high, your shoulders back. And if you're gonna subscribe to something online, the only thing worthy is our show. You can subscribe to all the porn sites you want, but you know what that's gonna get you. That's right, a venereal disease. Now
what?
Well,
Some of the, they may believe it. I don't know. 877-876-PHIL. Is Sarah Palin killing innocent animals in the name of ratings and politics? Well, let's hope so. Anyway, Aaron Sorkin and PETA think they that she is. Aaron Sorkin, now he's a television guy. Why would you be surprised at that, Mr. Sorkin? Of course she is. Of course she's doing it for ratings. Wouldn't you? Anyway, more info on the Ronnie Chasen murder. Plus, Oprah talks about the lesbian rumors. 877-876-PHIL and PhilHendryShow.com. And I want to start with the Ronnie Chasen story because I was, as you may have been, if you're following the story, and I am, taken aback. I was stunned. My eyeballs bugged from my head. You should say whatever you want. When I saw here that the Beverly Hills police have now said the ballistics do match the gun that Harold Martin Smith used to kill himself last week. The gun used to kill Hollywood publicist Ronnie Chasen most likely is the same one that a person of interest, Harold Martin Smith, killed himself with last week. Now, that is a little bit of a backstep from what they said today, which was it is. So I would ask my producer, give me the latest story on this, including what you told me, because I don't know if it's in it or not, Jason, the fact they said he was on a bicycle. Oh, here it is. It's in here. Despite coverage that has speculated Chasen was killed as part of an elaborate plot, police now believe Smith, an ex-convict, simply rode a bicycle alongside Chasen's Mercedes-Benz and opened fire as she waited to make a left turn off of a Sunset Boulevard. Chasen managed to drive off where she later crashed into a light pole. Police added that no shell casings have been found. We believe that Mr. Smith acted alone. We don't believe it was a professional hit. According to Beverly Hills Police Chief David Snowden, acting on information from a tipster to the TV show America's Most Wanted, police sought to question Smith at his home in Hollywood. And that was at the Harvey Apartments, you remember, on December the 1st. Before they could talk to him, though, he shot himself to death, splattering the apartment lobby with blood. That's a detail that ABC could have left out. They say most likely, because the ballistics report is technically preliminary, they say most likely this was the gun used to kill Ronnie Chasen. Here is Beverly Hills Police Chief David Snowden announcing these ballistics results.
Our detectives requested the release of the weapon used in the commission of the suicide to be turned over to the LASO homicide, lab for analysis. The ballistics comparison was to be conducted. This morning, the crime lab at the LASO firearm section notified us that they have a preliminary ballistics result. The weapon used by our person of interest matched the evidence from the Chasen homicide.
Beverly Hills Police Sergeant Mike Publicker told reporters today the department's working theory. Now, here is their working theory on the Chasen murder.
The detectives were able to do numerous interviews, and through the information obtained in the interviews, it appears that he did act alone. There was a question posed earlier of whether Mr. Smith knew Mrs. Chasen. It does not appear at this time that there's any connection between the two. We believe that his mode of transportation was by bicycle. This was a random act of violence with Mr. Smith's background. We believe it was most likely a robbery gone bad.
Chasen, as we mentioned, managed to drive off. They haven't found any shell casings. I don't know whether that means he picked them up or what. Acting on information, as we mentioned, from a tipster on America's Most Wanted, they went to the apartment. The tipster at that point wanted to remain anonymous, and they're going to respect that, as will America's Most Wanted. Might have been one of those people in the apartment house. This guy was talking to everybody.
Well, he told everybody that he did. Ronnie Chasen, you're getting $10,000 for it.
Yeah. And think the guy was crazy then, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, I thought he was nuts from the beginning. I still think he's nuts. And I remember saying to you guys last week, I didn't think it was a hit because it doesn't sound like a very private place to kill somebody. Just drive up next to them in the middle of a lit intersection. But I don't know. I don't know anything about it. But the fact that the cat killed her on a bicycle, that I didn't see that one coming, and that it was him, you know. He sounds like some crazy man who was riding his damn bike and just opened up. I don't even know if he asked her to open the window or open to, you know, to roll your window down, give me your money. I mean, was there a conversation between the two of them? Did she start to take off and he fired at her, you know?
I'd like to know if the guy got any military.
Has he got any what?
Military. I mean, if he had a close pattern, if he got any weapons training, you know.
Well, we'll find out. That's a good question. Smith boasted about committing the murder. He claimed he had $10,000 coming to him for the crime and said he would not be willing to return to jail. He had a long criminal record. In the aftermath of his suicide, residents said they doubted Smith when he took credit for Chasen's murder. They noted that he was tall but of slight unimposing build and that he regularly was seen riding through the neighborhood on a bicycle, wearing gray gardening gloves and sometimes acting strangely. Anyway, in the rest of this stuff, you guys know, LAPD removed a bicycle, or Beverly Hills Police, rather, removed a bicycle from the scene of Smith's suicide that they would be delivering to Beverly Hills for analysis. Beverly Hills Police repeatedly emphasized the ballistics results matching the gun was preliminary and that the investigation continues. That's why they won't say absolutely for sure it's preliminary. The cops complained of erroneous information. Previous reporting on the killing has suggested it was the work of an expert assassin. Today, the police had another story. We don't believe that he was a paid hitman. This was a random act of violence. With Mr. Smith's background, we believe it was a robbery gone bad. Though the interviews and the information we received, that lead us to believe that he was a desperate point in his life and was reaching out and doing desperate measures. Earlier reports that ballistics had failed to link the guns in the two crimes also were incorrect. That was wrong. It was erroneous information. Meaning, they didn't get it wrong. It was reported wrong.
What's that mean?
It means that they might very well have linked the murder weapon to, you know, the bullets to the gun that guy had.
Yeah. So what?
So they was reported wrong is what I'm telling you. They didn't say it. Whoever reported that the ballistics showed that they did not match. That was the wrong report, but it wasn't that's what Beverly Hills was saying. You understand?
I don't understand. Beverly Hills, they're not going to say something wrong.
Who?
Beverly Hills Police.
The Beverly Hills Police didn't say anything wrong. That's what the guy's saying. He's saying, we never released any information on this, either yay or nay. We never said that it's this or that. Whoever said that it didn't match, we didn't say that. That's what the guy is trying to say. Get out of here. So that's case closed, man.
Yeah, well, you're still wrong, man.
By 2 weeks. I said they'd have it wrapped up in 2 weeks, and I was wrong by 2 weeks.
But yeah, but how do you know? That's a lucky guess.
A lucky guess? How many people were going to say that the Beverly Hills Police would wrap this thing up in 2 weeks? I'm the only guy that would say that. The only guy. There wasn't anybody else who was even going to speculate. Right away I knew they're going to have this thing wrapped up.
Yeah, well, you were wrong. It was 4 weeks.
Oh, well, 4 weeks. There wasn't anybody that would even tell you 4 weeks. ACLU asking Tennessee schools to celebrate holidays, not just Christmas. Dateline Johnson City, Tennessee. The American Civil Liberties Union is urging school administrators to prohibit Christmas parties. Superintendents across the state receiving a letter from the pain in the ass ACLU today, reminding them of the law.
Pain in the ass.
ACLU of Tennessee Executive Director Hedy Weinberg says the group is not against holiday celebrations. No, not at all. Just celebrations that focus on specific religious beliefs. It is a friendly reminder, Hedy Weinberg said, before we sue you and sue you until you bleed. Our goal is to ensure that when these celebrations are done at the school, they're done in a way that all the students can feel they can participate in them. The ACLU says, you know, I never felt like the kids were not participating in the Christmas celebrations we had at my school.
Really?
Yeah, except it was a Catholic school, so.
Do they have Jews?
A Catholic school? I don't think we had any Jewish kids. If we did, they were Catholics. The ACLU says school-organized celebrations of specific religions are a violation of the Constitution. Don't do it! Well, before Johnson City Schools learned of the letter, the communications supervisor there, Dr. Deborah Bentley, said, yeah, we know. Thank you very much. Thank you. We do not celebrate a specific religious holiday. Tell the ACLU everything's good. You don't have to get your gear up, man. It's all good. We won't have any fun. We'll have a holiday celebration. What would you suggest? What would you suggest, ACLU? Because, you know, I can make the point that now what you're encouraging is a pagan celebration.
Wait a minute. You got a point.
That's right.
Well, I don't get it.
I'll tell you what I mean. First of all, if you're encouraging a holiday celebration, well, there has to be some basis. What are you using? What kind of ritual are you using? It can't be Christian, can it?
No.
Can't be Jewish. Wouldn't be Jewish. Although I suppose the Hanukkah is a holiday celebration.
It's not going to be Muslims. It's not going to be Kwanzaa. It's not going to be any of that stuff because it cannot be something that makes people feel left out. So what's left? What do you celebrate? What kind of pageant?
Well, you know, like the solstice.
Oh, the solstice, huh? What's that supposed to mean? What do you mean solstice?
Yeah, like when the longest day. I mean the shortest day.
Shortest day? Based on what? Why do I celebrate that? What's that? Is that religious?
No, it's just, you know, it's day. Look, it's like a short day.
So what? So what if it's a short day? Why should I feel good about that? Why do I feel happy about that? I hate that. I can't stand it, as a matter of fact. If you want my honest opinion, celebrating the winter solstice makes me want to blow my brains out of my skull because I can't stand darkness. I like light. I like summer. My favorite time of the year is summer. You understand?
Yeah, but I mean, they're saying like the winter solstice.
You knuckleheads don't understand what I'm talking about, do you?
No.
I'm talking about the ACLU is basically saying have a holiday pageant. They're talking about revert to pre-Christian times, make it about paganism. That's what I'm talking about.
Hey, wait a minute. You might have something there.
You better believe I got something here. Paganism. That's right. Back in the days when it was a, pantheistic.
What's that mean?
Celebrate like a pan?
That's right, man. We worship pans. No, pantheism is the multitude of gods. Polytheism, if you will. A multitude of gods. Sun god, moon god, sun up god, sundown god, fog god, light to moderate eye irritation from smog god. All them gods. So that's what the ACLU wants us to do. I suggest that a countersuit is filed. If you Christians really want to, you want to outsmart these people, you file a suit against the ACLU. Say, what do you mean by a holiday celebration? Well, you know what we mean. No, we don't. No, you're going to have to define it. What do you mean by a holiday celebration? Because I'm going to tell you right now, I will not have my child involved in a pagan celebration. You're talking about a holiday, meaning what? Do we have food? Well, sure. Based on what? Based upon those days when the tribes got together and exchanged foods on the event of the whatever the hell, the solstice and the pagan and the elf king or whatever they were doing? Go ahead, ACL. Tell me what kind of... And they very smugly will say, you know what we mean. No, we don't know what you mean. And you better spell it out there, lawyer. Spell it out, smart ass. See... If you are going to adhere to the Constitution of the United States of America, you can't have any celebrations. Because celebrating a time of the year bespeaks a spiritual or religious celebration. Because it harkens back to a time when we did celebrate before Christianity, before monotheism, before Islam, before Judaism. We still celebrated a spiritual holiday. It had its roots. It was informed by a spiritualism. It was paganism, but nonetheless, it was a belief in supernatural beings. So if you want to do it the right way, ACLU, you can't have any celebrations at all. So why don't you guys just go ahead and take credit for the following? You have completely destroyed any sort of celebratory mood around this time of year in our schools. That's what you want. But you won't come out and say that because that would make you the Scrooges that you are. So what you say is, oh, well, a holiday celebration would be fine. Well, what do you mean by that? You're going to have to define a holiday celebration. Now, if there's any Christians listening to me, you got any brains at all in your head? That's the way you attack it. That's the way you do it. We'll be back. The world famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
That's Phil fantastic, Henry. Mr. Henry.
No, good. Thank you.
Phil Hendry Show.
You know, Shakespeare is the one who said, these are the times that try men's souls. He wrote that. I don't know whether that's part of Richard III or it was Henry IV. But these are the times that try men's souls. Or maybe he didn't write that. Maybe that was the same guy that wrote, now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their parties. But these are the times that are trying men's souls. These are the times when common sense, you can't really rely on common sense because we have to go by the letter of the law. And I agree. I want the law to be tested. I want our great Constitution to be tested. I want all of these laws to be tested. I want all attitudes to be tested. I want even the stupid
to have their day. Is Sarah Palin's Alaska using animal hunting controversy to improve TLC's ratings? Aaron Sorkin and PETA are on the attack. Is Mama Grizzly willing to kill just to improve her Sarah Palin's Alaska ratings? Now, let's answer that question. The answer is, of course, yes, because everything you do on a TV show or a radio show is intended to improve your ratings. Everything you do. Just like everything you do when you go to work is intended to make you money and hopefully make you more money. There's no shame in that. That happens to be the reason why we go to work. Oh, yes, of course we love our jobs, but you'd be surprised at how little you love a job you don't get paid for. You'd be surprised how more difficult a job is when you don't make any money doing it. You may love the hell out of it. One of the reasons why you love it, maybe, is because you can make a living on it. If you can't make a living on it anymore, you may not want to do it anymore. To ask a question, especially a guy like Aaron Sorkin, who I'm told has television experience, is she doing it for ratings, is about the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. People for the ethical treatment of animals think so. They're not sure, but they think, wow, we're on to something now. You think she's doing it for ratings? I don't know. Why don't you do a white paper on it and get back to us? Producer-writer Aaron Sorkin says Palin is worse than Michael Vick. Now, there's more of that great American hyperbole we're used to here in the early part of the 21st century. Hitler's not enough. We can't just say, for instance, that Bush or Obama is Hitler. That's almost meaningless. It's so asinine. However, you can come up with the Michael Vick, comparison now. You can say that someone who is hunting legally, and maybe donating the meat to poor people, which generally is what happens in many of these locales where people are, bagging some of this big game, and they have it slaughtered, and they have it basically shipped to areas where people need the food. They need the meat. Sometimes it's donated to native people. Sometimes it's just given to poor people, to poor people's shelters. It's not like Sarah Palin's going to leave it laying bleeding in the snow. She's going to take it. Have it professionally, what is the word that they use? Have it professionally dressed, I think.
What do you mean?
That's what they say. It's professionally dressed.
Well, I don't know. Would they put a hat on it?
Put a hat on it? They're slaughtering it, okay?
Yeah, what do they call it dressed for?
They ain't putting a hat on it. Are you out of your mind? So they professionally prepare it. Now, that none of that means anything to a guy like Aaron Sorkin, PETA, or anybody that is even remotely related to any of them, because to them, hunting is tantamount to, if you're a hunter, you might as well be a concentration camp guard circa 1942. That's the same thing. There's no difference. I know what I said is ridiculous, but that's what these asses rely on. On the latest episode of Sarah Palin's do they put a hat on it?
I didn't know what you meant when you talk about dressing it.
On the latest episode of Sarah Palin's Alaska, the former governor and her father go hunting for deer. A daughter and her father hunting for deer. Indeed, she shoots and she kills a caribou. Then helps skin and quarter the animal so they can bring home as much meat as they can carry. In a post on the Huffington Post to Sarah Palin, Aaron Sorkin, who acknowledges he eats meat and wears leather because he's just a dumbass from Hollywood, writes, like 95% of the people I know, I don't have a visceral look-it-up problem eating meat or wearing a belt. But like, I can't finish this?
We'll come back.
All right, when we come back, I'll finish this delicious deer meat. I mean, this story about Sarah Palin. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. And they dress it. They put it in a suit. With Brooks Brothers slacks and shoes.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, so anyway, I'm going to get back to this because this is, if you'll pardon the expression, this is the meat of the matter here. We're talking about Palin and the fact that she shot a caribou on her episode of Sarah Palin's Alaska. And now not only PETA, there's no real rhyme or reason to why PETA does what they do other than the fact that they want to make sure that people know they exist. So they will do such low base things as use the murder of a kid in Canada, a guy that was butchered alive by a madman and had his head cut off on a bus. They'll use that in their ads to protect bunny rabbits. So along comes the Huffington Post, and they have printed a piece, I think is what they call it, by Aaron Sorkin, who's a television producer. Now, Arianna Huffington, you've probably noticed, is starstruck. This is a woman who, she's had actual professional photographs taken of herself as if she's a movie star. She will print anything that any movie star or any TV star anywhere writes, no matter how utterly stupid it is, because she's excited by that kind of contact. So she'll take an Aaron Sorkin, because she thinks she saw his name on a credit somewhere, maybe Fantasy Island, something she was watching 2 a.m. one morning. And, oh, my God, let's put Aaron Sorkin on the Huffington Post, because he wrote a piece about what a piece of crap Sarah Palin is. Now, this guy is talking about Palin getting her kicks killing animals. He says, I certainly don't want to volunteer to be one of the people that kills an animal. If I were picked to kill one, in some kind of a lottery from hell, I wouldn't do a little dance of joy. He says to Ms. Palin, you weren't killing that animal for food or shelter or fashion. You were killing it for fun. You enjoy killing animals. He says, I can make the distinction between the two of us, but I've tried and tried and tried for the life of me. I can't make a distinction between what you get paid to do and what Michael Vick went to prison for doing. Now, Sarah Palin shot that caribou, and they butchered it, and they're going to eat the meat of that animal. Now, I don't know the difference. Somebody can help me. The difference between shooting a caribou and slaughtering it and keeping that meat in the freezer and eating that meat and going to the store and buying an equal amount of meat to eat, putting it in the freezer.
Well, you don't have to kill the one in the store.
Oh, you don't have to kill the one in the store. Thank you very much, bud. Thank you.
Why?
Well, that's what Mr. Sorkin says he does. He says, while he insults Palin's intelligence, when he says he uses the word viscerally, says, look it up. It's not that impressive of a word, Mr. Sorkin. Most people don't have to look that one up. But he says that he doesn't have a problem eating meat, and he wears a belt. In other words, he eats meat and he wears leather. So somebody else kills the animals that he eats and the animals that he uses, and that makes him better than Sarah Palin, who will shoot the animal because he doesn't enjoy killing animals, but he does enjoy their death because he enjoys the byproduct of their death, their meat, which he gleefully eats, I'm sure.
Maybe he don't gleefully eat it.
That's right. Aaron Sorkin must be bawling like a baby every night when he has a steak or whatever the hell he eats, or when he puts a belt on.
Probably. Well, you don't know. He might be sad. If he's in Hollywood, he's being in Hollywood, leather pants make him sad.
Yeah.
Leather pants make him sad?
Well, yeah, because he's in Hollywood, he might probably wear leather pants.
If he goes to a club in leather pants, it would make him cry.
So I just want to get this straight, bud. Aaron Sorkin puts on leather pants to go to a club at night and weeps because they...
What are you laughing about?
What am I laughing about? The guy puts on leather pants to go to a club and he's crying because he's wearing leather pants?
Well, why do you think he'd enjoy it?
Well, look at man, I may be dumb, man, but I ain't that dumb. You know, like the saying goes, I might have been born at night, but I wasn't born last night. Don't sit there and tell me that you're high and mighty and morally superior to someone that kills a deer while you eat meat and wear leather, meaning somebody else can do the killing for me because I will not do it myself. That makes me better, not only than Sarah Palin, by the way, it makes me better than the guy that killed that steer or the guy that skinned that cow, so I'm wearing a belt and eating steak. That's Aaron Sorkin. He's better than the guy that's doing his killing for him. Can you believe that a man would sit down and pen garbage like this and then allow it to be printed? And I'll tell you something, Mr. Sorkin, Arianna Huffington, that's just the broad to do it, man. Like I said, she's starstruck. She'll print anything written by anybody that even smells like Hollywood money. And there you are, man, for all the world. The dumbest jackass I've read today with your little piece here in the Huffington Post. I don't like killing animals. I agree. I eat steak. I'm just like you. Here's the difference between you and me. I don't parade my hypocrisy for the whole world in a post on the Huffington thing.
What's it called, anyway?
the Huffington Post. I guess it's his thing is called a essay. Why don't they call it a post? Then he goes on to attack her for killing the caribou for money. That was the first moose ever murdered for political gain. Hmm. You knew there'd be a protest from PETA, and you knew that would be an opportunity to hate on some people, you witless bully. Here's a guy that's calling a woman names for doing what other people do for him as he eats his meat. And you'll pardon the expression. The activist group PETA believes the ex-Alaska governor is spending so much small-screen time clubbing halibut and quartering caribou because she's trying to improve her TLC show's numbers. What is it? Clubbing halibut?
I don't know. That's what you do.
What's wrong with that? Maybe, you see, you could also buy fish from fish farms. There's all kinds of ways of getting fish. A lot more on the topic of fish. You can go to a fish farm. Well, I wouldn't buy fish from a fish farm if somebody had a loaded shotgun to my head. I wouldn't do it, okay? They're swimming in their own filth. I won't go there. I only buy fish from, I try to buy fish, line-caught fish, from our good old-fashioned American fishermen. But guess what? I don't eat that much fish because I can't find that much of that. Every time I go to a supermarket, I'm looking at China, Vietnam, this, that. I ain't going to buy that crap.
Why don't you buy any Chinese fish? They know all about fish over there.
What do you mean they know all about fish?
Well, they got on a fish farm.
I don't want to buy fish from a fish farm. I wouldn't buy Chinese fish, man, with your money. Forget it.
But what are you going to buy? But you buy Canadian fish.
No, I don't buy Canadian fish either. Well, I know we're on in Canada. Yes, I do buy Canadian fish. I buy American and I buy Canadian, but I don't buy none of that Chinese stuff, okay? And frankly, I don't buy anything. I don't eat fish. All right, so here's this jackass who says, and that what a terrible thing, clubbing halibut. Well, you can either catch a fish with a damn fishing pole. You can buy fish that have been fish farmed. I guess you can get fish that have been caught with nets. I don't know. What's the most humane way, man? Is it catching it with a line? Is it what? Some of these people, and here, this is what I'm talking about. I'm going to give you the bottom line right now. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Here it is. This is a generation, I tend to think it's the aging baby boomers who are also influencing a large segment of the younger people, but they are a community of people, and I'm not quite sure how large they are. They believe that the quantum leap in human behavior and intelligence, that moment has arrived, it's now. And why do they believe that? Because like many people who are going to die soon, my fellow baby boomers, they think the world is going to come to an end if they don't do what they got to do, see? So everything revolves around them. And they believe the quantum leap in American and global intelligence is going to take place, and America is where it's going to have to be led because everybody else is too stupid, but they wouldn't say that because that's racist and they would never admit to that, but that's kind of how they feel. Now, with this quantum leap in intelligence and behavior comes the following things. We must, simply must, get off of fossil fuels now. Not someday, now. Because like I said, the baby boomers and their offspring, they're all going to commit suicide up in a mountain in Montana if it doesn't happen. Number two, we must equate animal life with human life now. We cannot evolve this philosophy. We can't wait for people to get up to speed on any of this stuff. Right now, you have to accept that a dog is equal to a person. Something like that. I'm not really sure, but I think it's pretty much like that. Number three, the idea that guns are a tool to be used in self-defense, this is absolutely anathema, and they've lost that fight. But if you ever want to have some fun, go on Facebook and mention that for Christmas you bought your daughter or your son a little toy gun and watch the jackasses come out of the woodwork. It's amazing.
Yeah, I remember that one time you did that and all them ladies.
Yeah, all them ladies is right, man. I said something about, I don't know, toy guns. I forget what I was talking about. And one after the other of the dumbest human beings I think I've ever seen in my life, and it is Facebook, so it's a sure bet. Talking about how guns are bad toys for kids. So in other words, and I posted, I said, gee, it's nice to know that we've evolved past 1981, not, which we haven't. So all of these things have got to be done, and they got to be done now, and they don't give a damn whether you're ready to accept it or not. They don't give a damn whether you're ready to make the quantum jump or not. It must happen. Look at otherwise, what's going to happen? Why we may actually defend ourselves against barbarians using the weaponry and the tools of violence that we should use. Why we can't have that. When they saw 9/11 happen, they realized the quantum leap in behavior and intelligence must happen. We should all just be groovy and peaceful right now, man. Even if it means standing there while all those around us are slaughtered. That's, you think I'm kidding? That's exactly what they want, man. PETA, there's not a thing about them that makes any sense. And to listen to a man like Sorkin, who, you know, I'm surprised the guy admitted that he eats meat, you know.
Yeah, but he didn't say what kind. He said it.
All right, bud, that's very funny. The fact of the matter goes, a guy like Sorkin sitting there and saying that Sarah Palin has a moral problem, and he's eating meat, and he's wearing belts, and he's morally superior to her, and the guy that goes out and kills his steer for him, I can't even believe this guy. Did anybody pre-read this, sir, before you submitted it to, because you know Ariana's going to publish it. Next thing you know, she's going to be calling you up to see if you'll produce a pilot.
I don't know what you're talking about. Dressing a deer, you know, but clubbing a halibut, I don't see anything wrong with that.
I don't see anything wrong with clubbing a halibut either. Or you can catch it on a line so it just it can suffocate while it's laying on the deck of the boat. How about that? Would you like that? Or maybe we just don't eat fish, so we're down to no meat, no fish. What's next, man?
You can eat broccoli, but you can't. You torture it.
What do you mean torture broccoli? Get out of here, will you? 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
That's Aaron Sorkin, huh?
Yeah.
Well, he looks like a douchebag, too. What do you think of that?
You gotta watch out, man. I mean, you still gotta go out and, like, be an actor and all that stuff.
I gotta go out and be an actor, huh? I ain't gonna go out and be nothing, man. Here is where I live, this is where I sit, and this is where it's all going to... I'm here, and this is where I will remain. He wrote a good movie, The Social Network. We love that flick. And that's the thing about these cats that are not public spokespeople or commentators in the classic sense, in the sense that I am. Because that's what I am. I'm a satirist. I'm a commentator. I do it every night. I do it 3 hours a night. I've got experience at it. I know my thing. You know, I know the timing. I know the whole thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I are good at it. I talk good and everything.
I know.
But a guy like Sorkin... Why, he writes a good movie, but when he opens his yap to say something in the venue what I am in, why, he sound dumb, he do. All right, Supreme Court appears divided over state laws against illegal immigration. Well, maybe you guys ought to get with it.
I don't understand about how they got nine, but they're all deadlocked and everything about that.
Well, this is Elena Kagan. I don't get this. Elena Kagan, who came for the Obama administration, announced she would not participate in the decision. That set the stage for a 4-4 split, which would uphold Arizona's law but set no legal precedent. You know, I don't understand how she got approved if you know, one of the biggest rulings to come down the pike in years on immigration, and she happens to be nominated and approved, advised and consented and kicked in there. And she can't take part in this because whatever the hell they call it. It's a conflict of interest. The Supreme Court showdown over whether states can aggressively enforce laws against illegal immigrants may have ended in a draw Wednesday. If so, Arizona's 3-year-old law that cracks down on employers who knowingly hire illegal workers will stand. They have until April, folks. That's when the Supreme Court recesses.
It could serve as a model for other states and cities that seek to adopt stricter enforcement measures. But if Justice Anthony M. Kennedy joins his more liberal colleagues, as he did for part of Wednesday's argument, it could signal trouble in the future for other laws targeting illegal immigrants. They include Arizona's law that requires police to check the immigration status of suspicious people who are lawfully stopped, which could reach the court during its next term. At issue Wednesday was the fate of the legal Arizona Workers Act, which imposes the so-called business death penalty on employers who are caught twice knowingly hiring illegal, blah, blah. You know the story with Arizona. Let's get out of here. Here's the point. They are debating the constitutionality of a state passing immigration laws when it is the purview, when it is the supremacy of the federal government is within their the bounds of their administration. The federal government controls the borders, right? Right. But what happens when the federal government ain't doing its job? It would appear to me that the states then it's incumbent upon them. I don't know. Maybe that's unconstitutional. Maybe somebody, and these are brighter people than me, will say, "Well, no, Phil." Yes, while it is, of course, the right of the people to protect themselves and protect the borders, it's not the federal border that they're protecting. So if Arizona wants to protect the border, they have to protect the whole damn border, the whole federal border. Well, what are you talking about? Lower courts upheld the law, but the Obama administration and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce joined in arguing the state law should be voided because it conflicts with the federal government's authority over immigration. But. Those challenging the law were at a disadvantage Wednesday because the new justice, Elena Kagan, who came from the Obama administration, announced she would not participate in the decision because it is a conflict of interest, because she had been opposed to that law when she was a part of the Obama administration. So she is, and I suppose rightfully, removing herself from the decision-making process. I just don't understand how anybody so actively involved in such a controversial issue was automatically just with, you know, go ahead, man. The stakes were high, as has been more than 30 years since the Supreme Court ruled on a clash between a state and the federal government over immigration. Such clashes have become common in recent years as states and cities consider new enforcement measures. Kennedy often cast the deciding vote in close cases, but did not say definitively how he would decide. If Kennedy follows near the end of the argument, he said he agreed with criticisms voiced by the three liberal judges. If he follows the view, he could cast a fourth vote to strike down Arizona's law. Justice Antonin Scalia took Arizona's side throughout the argument. He said the state was forced to adopt strict measures of its own because of the lack of federal enforcement. That's what I'm looking at. It's the only option the state had, he said. Arizona faced serious trouble financially because of unrestrained immigration. The federal government has simply not enforced the immigration restrictions. And his fellow conservatives joined him. Now, are we not talking about what's going to be in the best interest of the American people? What's going to address the problem, you know?
Well, what do you know it's going to be like in the future and everything, you know?
What do you mean?
Like, they could say it's okay now that Arizona has a law, but that might make it worse later on.
Well, all right. What Bud's saying is they might rule it is constitutional for a state to take these steps if the federal government is not doing the job. But what does that mean down the road when other issues of federalism versus states' rights come to the fore? In other words, we believe in federal supremacy, but who exactly makes the decision that the federals are not making, they're not doing the job, see?
Well, yeah, but I mean, you can tell they ain't doing a job on immigration.
Well, it would seem that any sane human being would look at what the federal government's doing with immigration. They're not getting the job done. Not getting the job done. But, you know, it may not be so cut and dried with other issues. And that, so that's a good point, Bud. That's one of the few.
I make good points all the time. You guys don't ever talk about it.
You mean like the whole Lord of the Flies thing?
You brought up Lord of the Fly.
I didn't, Lord of the Fly?
Yeah, that movie that guy was talking about.
No, that was Jeff Downer was talking about Lord of the Fly. Yeah, but I heard you saying that was a good idea. And it's called Lord of the Flies. All right, anyway, it's April when this whole shooting match, at least April is when the Supreme Court will recess. I think we can trust that they'll have a decision by then. And if it's tied, that means Arizona then is boom, boom, ba boom, ba boom. Arizona's in the clear. They say there's no legal precedent. That means that they cannot use any ruling from the Supreme Court or the federal government to say, aha, look how they ruled in the Arizona case. It wouldn't exist. Phil Hendry Show, produced by Jason Rantz. Our technical director is Charles Wygan. Our associate producer, Dan Northcraft. PhilHendryShow.com. PhilHendryShow.com for all your Phil Hendry Show needs. Woo!
Phil Hendry.
Aaron Sorkin.